This is Defenders of the Mirth for January 11th, 2010, official episode 1, A Talk of Naughty Tech. Hi, I'm Johnny.
And I'm James. I promise this won't suck as official as the official episode 1 of Star Wars. Well, hopefully not anyway.
Oh dear, what a terrible joke to begin. But anyway, we are going to talk about a few things today from the last show to begin with. Starting with some errata, some corrections. I said that the motto for the No Agenda show was that they go out and hit people in the face. The correction for that was they actually go out and hit people in the mouth. And it's not a motto, it's a formula.
It's a formula.
It's a formula. There a we very go. Effective formula. Any corrections you want to make? Oh, yes, of course, the people that we talked about, the people
yes.
who are sadly dead. Their names. Mine, the fellow who died in 2006, was James Kim. And he was a member of CNET. He did a lot of their photography blogs and printer reviews and things like that. He always used to go and take a lot of pictures of his children and use that as a sort of method to test out color quality of printers and stuff. And he was very a family-orientated fellow. So it was a bit sad, as I said before, that he died trying to protect his family. But his name was James Kim.
Okay, and the host of DC Noise was a Mr. Eric Martin. I can't believe I forgot his name. I do apologize to anyone that would listen, anyone that's anything to do with that show that I didn't remember it at the time. But it's Mr. Eric Martin, and my co-host Johnny went out of his way to make sure that we put that in the start of the show just to...
And just on that, I actually went and listened to the tribute show, and it was very emotional. And the first half hour or 40 minutes of it was taken off by... the other post talking about his friend, and then he put in a number of recordings the people from that community had put together, saying their thoughts and how they knew Eric and how he'd be missed. And then the very strangest thing happened, as I'm sure you know. They had already recorded 2 episodes the Friday before he died, and he added the first of the 2 recordings to the tribute episode. And the very scary part was they were talking about what characters they wanted to be from the comics that they were going to talk about that day, and Eric said, I'm going to be, I forget the name, and he said, and I'm dead but I may come back.
Oh, that is you couldn't even write this stuff down. It's just something that, oh.
There is a link on the last episode show notes, the 0.5 episode, non-official, first test. And if you go listen to the tribute, it is a very emotional co-host. And just, it must have been very difficult for him to do. But yes, now we're going to go into additions, news, as it were. We were talking about the fact that we didn't have copyright yet, and we were going to try and get it by getting in contact with, I think it was King's Publishing.
King's Publishing, yeah.
Yeah, King's Publishing. And they got back to us about 2 hours after finished recording with the words, thank you for... actually, I'll get it up here. It'll take me a moment. They said something along the lines, we thank you for asking for the use of our copyright of Defenders of the Mirth, and we'd have to say no at this time. So I replied just saying, okay, well, we won't use any of the official stuff, we'll just try and come up with something original. That's the point, really, is it does sort of force you to be more original in your creation.
It does, but just the way they phrase it raised a query in my head. What would be the appropriate time to hit them for the copyrights? Like, we won't be allowing you at this time, but, you know, maybe...
Well, I was talking to a friend, a lawyer, who I won't disclose because apparently they're not allowed to advertise. But she thought that it was probably just a blanket response, that they say no to everyone,
probably.
And that we'd probably get away with it because we're not important enough, which was a lovely comment to make, but...
I am important, damn it.
But it's a fair point. I mean, it's not as if we'd be a threat, and I don't think people would be confused between a 1980s, 90s cartoon series and a podcast about, well, essentially nothing. But...
Yeah, and now I'd like to show everyone out there that I bear no passing resemblance to Flash Gordon. Although I can see Johnny, he looks a bit like Mandrake.
I was thinking Mandrake myself when I was watching the thing. Anyway, if you want to go out and find what we're talking about, you may not know the reference. If you go to YouTube, and funnily enough, copyright doesn't apply there. In most cases, if you search for Defenders of the Earth theme, you'll see what we were thinking of playing with, which we're not going to now.
In fact, if you want to, you can play the theme right before playing this podcast. That's sort of what we had.
It might get you in the mood. But, yes, we have a friend, Brian Smith, whose art is on DeviantArt. He takes a lot of photography. We'll put a link up on the site, probably in today's show notes. He's going to make us a theme. And there may be something of a reference to Defenders of the Earth in that theme that you might want to be able to point out. You can do that either by emailing the address we gave last time, podcast@defendersoftheearth.com. But we've also added some new contact methods. We have a Twitter account at
Mirth Defenders.
Mirth Defenders.
Twitter.com/MirthDefenders.
Yep, at Mirth Defenders. And we also have a Facebook page, and it's just called Defenders of the Mirth. And if you want to join in there, then we've had some feedback, but we'll go into that later in the show. Now, today's topics, we're going to talk about the last decade. I know everybody's doing that because there essentially is no news. But we're going to put a different angle on it. A lot of the news about technology has been the last decade and industry changers, things that have completely changed the industry to make people more enthusiastic about the technology and where trends have come from. But they don't really apply to people like us and maybe people like yourself because we're quite poor, really, and can't afford industry-changing technologies.
Oh,
there's a telephone call.
This isn't the call-in show.
Pause it for a second, and then you'll hear us after James takes his call. And through the magic of radio, we're back. James had his phone call. Do you want to talk about that phone call anyway, or do you just want to get into it?
It was just one of my many, many fans.
Ah, yes, James. James is from a circle that you've never heard of because it is so elite. But yes.
It's not elite. It's the other people that just put up with me. That's who it is. That's my elite circle.
Fair enough. Anyway, the topic for today's show, as I said, was a decade of technology that didn't change an industry. It changed us. Things that just came along that were very free, but also very innovative and just changed our view of how to use technology, how the internet affected us, stuff like that. So I'm going to throw it over to James to begin. What was that? Start of the decade, turn of the decade, 1999.
Chronologically?
Yeah.
Oh, dear, yes. I can't believe you went chronologically, okay? And you, I have it ranked from important to least.
Oh, you've done importance?
Yes, importance.
Oh, okay. What was your most important technology?
Most important.
The noughties?
And we had a brief discussion of what our ideas were earlier, and Johnny hadn't even, I don't think he had really thought about this, but I think my main one, the main thing that has changed it for me is wireless internet. Internet wherever.
You are, yeah. Exactly. I mean, you can go into someone's house, and you can just ask for their password, and that's a concept that never would have been on the cards at the start of the 1990s.
But it's not the fact, it's like the fact that everything does it now. Like, MP3 players.
Yeah.
Like, your Game Boy. You know, you'd never imagine in a million years, but now everyone's like, oh, what's your Game
password?
Boy number, your password? I want to, you know, play brain training with somebody in Hong Kong or something like that.
Like, you know, between devices?
Between devices, yeah, just everything talks to the internet now, and that's amazing. You know... I don't even know, I can't even condense it into like a single point or anything like that. It's just the fact that, like, I remember when I was about 12 running this phone extension cable up the stairs in my grandparents' house.
Yes,
it had a wee wheel on it that made the squeaky noise.
And you had to find innovative ways to get the cable to not be across the carpet.
Oh yeah, I pulled up the carpet and then sort of stamped it down in the sides.
I ran it all around the door frame and tried to get it down the other side and used blue tack and all sorts of crazy.
I know, it was like, James, can I use the phone yet? Would be regularly shouted up the stairs. And now the fact, you know, all right, maybe I've expanded a bit more on the broadband than I've. But the fact that I can do this all wirelessly, you know, it's there's no cables involved.
You don't dial up.
You don't dial
up.
It's
just connected.
It's just there. And that is, well, that's just brilliant.
Well, it sort of fits in with my one. I mean, you're talking about the wireless, which was a major change. But the introduction of broadband itself, as you said, was also massive, because before, you know, you'd be taking up time, you'd have the 2-hour cutoff on AOL, and you'd be disconnected, and you'd only get 56k, You couldn't download a song. That would be the next thing. But for in less than half an hour. And it cost.
There it cost. Remember first using AOL. And not only were you charged for the phone call,
you were charged for the monthly charge.
Oh, AOL. If only you'd been better then, maybe you would have been a bit more loyal now.
They did do alright in the broadband time, but then they were bought by TalkTalk, and that sort of made them go downhill. But, what was I saying? Oh, yes. During the dial-up era, it was at the end of the 90s, it's not really that point, but that it's just a sort of story about the amount of time I spent on the internet. One of the bills that came through for a quarter was about £360. And it's very difficult to explain to your parents what it is you were doing. I mean, what do you? There's not much to do on the internet in 1999 other than talk to people in chat rooms.
Which, or I done quite a lot of.
Yeah. And I've met people in America. Well, I didn't meet them, obviously, but I talked to them in America and I talked to them across the world, and it was just a very connected thing. But then broadband is the major changer. MP3s, as I was referencing there, that came about, Napster mainly. That came about in June 1999, and I really only got into it at the start of the 2000s of the noughties. Before that, MP3.com. was just the introduction to the idea of MP3s, and I downloaded my first MP3. What was your first MP3?
What was my first MP3? Oh, I'm probably gonna criminalize myself in some way, but I believe it was End Together Now by Limp Bizkit.
When was that released?
Oh, it was about 2000.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I just recently, like probably a lot of people of my age, got into Limp Bizkit because I thought their version of the Mission Impossible theme was pretty cool. So I wanted to listen to everything. And it's like, End Together Now. And I thought it was like sort of half street with, and it had Method Man and Red Man in it. And I knew those names from MTV. And that's how I got that.
Mm-hmm. My first was not as hip and with it as yours. Mine was Walk On By. I think it was Aretha Franklin. I might get scolded for that, but
don't be scolded for that. Don't scold him for that.
No, I mean the wrong artist. I think it's Aretha Franklin. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. But I had it on my desktop, and it was. It took me about 45 minutes, as I said, to download. It was there for months, and I was just playing it every so often, thinking, this could be amazing. the idea of something just coming from that to on my computer and listening to it without any kind of going out and purchasing anything. And then Napster came along, and that's madness. I know there's a legal issue maybe back then, but I mean back then nobody had really done this before, and you didn't know whether or not, you didn't have an idea in your head about.
Oh no, we were kids. Oh, yeah. We had no idea of the legal ramifications of music theft.
And then of course Metallica got involved, and Dr. Dre and shut us down.
See, I didn't even want to get it. I like Dre, but Dre, you bad. Oh, and I don't even hold most of Metallica responsible. It's all Lars.
He was very outspoken. The argument is that their album before it was finished being recording was released early, and it wasn't finished yet, and they used the Napster download on an official radio station to promote it before it was really finished, and that was the beginnings of the argument. Although I don't remember that myself. The way it was presented to me was MP3s are bad, you're stealing our music. It wasn't a specific argument.
I think you've just invoked the power of Shane there with that one.
Ah, no. That's not nice. Anyway.
It wasn't meant to be anything.
It's a point that I've heard, and it could be true. It's worth investigation, and if anybody wants to add anything to that, again, you can contact us on all the ways we've mentioned. Now, the next thing that I had on my list was the effect of MSN Messenger after moving off of ICQ.
I was never on ICQ.
Never on ICQ?
No, no, I went straight to the MSN.
Oh!
Well, actually, no, that's not Strictly too. I think it was AOL. AOL Messenger first.
AOL Messenger, yeah.
And then I went to, you know, when I realised that not everyone had AOL.
No.
I went on to MSN.
Yeah.
And...
How many people did you meet then?
I mean, no one.
No one?
I never... MSN never introduced me to anyone I didn't know. It was just a greater range of communication with people than I did know.
Did know, yeah. I suppose I had help in the form of our soon-to-be theme tune creator, Brian Smith. He became something of an internet hub of people that didn't know each other. He just sort of went out and found people of disparate opinions and brought them into... Remember, there was a multi-chat feature?
Yes, yeah.
So he would just bring anyone he could find into multi-chat and then ask them to bring their friends in as well, and then we'd end up having this stream of consciousness that I hadn't seen before. Before that, ICQ was very... the chat rooms they did have were kind of like the way Google Wave is now. The type live. And that's funny, because Google Wave, they say that this has never been done before, the live chatting at the time you're typing, and that was done in ICQ in 1999. But anyway...
I haven't seen Google Wave and used it a little bit of it. It just seems to be an amalgamation of things that have all been done before.
Yeah. That
brought together. I don't think
Google Wave will be something that massively changes us in the decade of the tens.
Are the teenies so. I've heard it referred
teenies?
To. Teenies?
The teenies. Are we teeny boppers?
We're much too old for being teeny boppers. Much too old.
But MSN Messenger, because of that change, because there was actually multi-chat and there was actually people coming in that I'd never met, it was just a very different experience of communication on the internet.
I remember my first ever voice chat was through MSN.
Yeah.
MSN was great because at the time it was the easiest way to send files to people you didn't know.
From Napster.
Probably. Most undoubtedly from Napster. Undoubtedly. It was the easiest way to send files to your friends. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what, I'll go on MSN, you go on MSN, I'll just send it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Which even now is something that, you know, it's very hard to even pull that off now through network sharing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, if I, you know, even emailing, for the longest time, email always had a cap, which basically prevented you from sending anything too large. But you could do it through MSN. Because it was
direct file transfer.
It was direct file transfer, yeah.
Peer-to-peer.
And the first voice chat I ever had, although it was actually pretty good,
mm-hmm.
you know, which always made me wonder how Skype ever came into existence, you know, on the peer-to-peer chat thing. Because MSN voice chat was always good enough. I never saw anything in Skype that MSN didn't do before.
I think Skype got its people in a... Right, it's to do with regions. The UK sort of uses MSN Messenger more than America did at the time and does now. They are more, as if I'm right, into AOL Instant Messenger, which has its own client now. So that's where you find people. Now, that I don't know how their voice chat worked, but it wasn't set up to be very good for applications such as podcasts. And I think podcasting is why Skype has blown up as much as it has, because anyone who does a podcast, even the professional ones, like Twit and CNET, any time they have a remote host or a guest in, it's always through Skype. And I think because they just keep adding to it and adding features, like it's just recently announced proper high-definition video. Yeah.
That's not bad.
So it's just something that people latched onto as a method of recording shows. I think that's the difference. You couldn't really do that very effectively, you know, multi-chat in MSN Messenger or AOL Instant Messenger, I don't think.
No, just for the average user, I didn't think it offered.
No, well, and then they also do the Skype out thing, and in America that's probably more important to them because it's a cheaper international call system.
True.
I think that would probably be why. What do you think?
No. I don't think it really makes too much of a difference, to be honest.
No?
Right, that sort of went nowhere quite quickly.
Yeah, don't worry. What was your next most important
thing? My next thing. Oh, well, I'm probably going to get lynched by any Apple hater out there, but I think the iPod. going from the MP3 and semester, I think the iPod. The iPod was something that basically, like, I love my iPod.
Uh-huh.
I absolutely love it. And it doesn't do anything more than most music players, apart from the fact that it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I have used other MP3 players before. I've used Creatives.
Uh-huh.
I've used Sonys. And they've all, in different ways, took bits from the iPod. But my iPod is just...
I had a Creative Jukebox. That was the major MP3 player, I think, before the iPod came out.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was like shaped like a CD player, just in case people weren't used to the idea of carrying their music about in a smaller package. Pretty funny. I could carry, like, I don't remember, 200 songs, maybe. And the iPod had a lot more storage, and there was 2,000 songs in your pocket, I think that's the way they put it, 128 kilobit. But, yeah, I kind of missed the iPod completely, oddly. That just didn't register for me. I don't know what I was doing.
I still remember my first iPod. It was one of the Gen 1 black and white ones. Mm. And I remember it now. It was, like, it was heavy, and it was a brick.
Mm.
But just the wheel, you know.
Was it an actual, like, mechanical wheel?
No, I don't. It wasn't a mechanical wheel, I think. I can't remember, actually. It's been a long time. I'd have to dig it out.
Mm.
It may have actually been a mechanical wheel at that stage. It's in a box somewhere.
Wow.
It's in a box. I don't know. It was one of those things I thought, wow, this is really retro. It might be worth something one day.
Would you still have any music on?
Probably.
That would be
it'd be interesting to see what was still on there. Probably some dreadful new metal or something. Probably lots and lots of new metal and gangster rap at that stage.
Yeah, it was not a terrible place to go. It's quite good music there sometimes.
Occasionally. I listen to some crap too.
Alright, next thing. We're getting more into towards recent times. There's a bit of a gap in my memory about what happened on the internet and with technology, but... let's see. Well, podcasts, I sort of alluded to that with Skype. But I found podcasts in January 2006. And the way I found it was that I was looking for a method of connecting computers together in a virtual network. Bit of an odd way to find a podcast.
Well, I'm sure that's quite a common story.
So, I was searching for VPNs and proper clients, and I came across an episode called Hamachi is Great, or something like that. And it was an episode of Security Now, which was Steve Gibson and Leo Laporte. And I didn't know at the time that the whole story about Tech TV and where they all came from and how that had ended and they all divided up, and I didn't even know who Leo Laporte was. But this show happened to give me good advice on a bit of software to connect computers together. And I was like, podcasts? And because, as I say, I'd completely missed the iPod, I had no concept of it.
Yeah.
So I decided to listen to this show, Security Now, week to week, and then realized that he had a flagship show called Twit, which was about news and less nerdy. So I listened to that, and then they do a very clever thing, is that they promote other people's shows whenever they get them in as guests. I'm sure that happens a lot, and what does happen a lot in podcasts, but it seems to be very effective with them, because it's led me on to pretty much every other podcast I've listened to since. And I think I listen to about 24 hours of programming a week.
Yeah, well, I do hear you listen to podcasts. I actually also remember my first podcast, and I remember the reason I want to. Went to it, sorry. It's about 06, probably about 06, yeah. 07. And I was really... I'd really just got back into comic books at that stage after a long, long... I discovered a comic book store, and I really got into Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Ultimate Spider-Man was written by probably one of my favourite writers in comics at the minute, as is a lot because it's a very successful book, Brian Michael Bendis.
Mm-hmm.
Or Bendis, and I was reading the comic book site, and I saw that they had what's it when you write down something that's already there, like
what do you mean? It's
transcribed.
Oh, transcribed.
They transcribed a podcast interview, and I was trying to do work, uni work at the same time, and I was trying to read this, And then I was like, well, this is a transcription of a podcast. So I brought up iTunes, uh-huh. went and found the podcast, and listened to the podcast that I'd done my work.
The way it was meant to be done.
And I found myself, you know, it's like, wow, this is brilliant. I was never really into radio shows or even talk radio, but at the same time, I never found anything on...
The specific your interest?
Yeah, my specific interest. And I went in and I discovered... Marvel and DC had their own podcast. DC especially covered their own convention shows.
Uh-huh.
They would record their own conventions, like DC Nation panel and stuff like uh-huh. that. And they'd put them up as podcasts, and that's sort of how I got started. And then I went and found more direct, like Comic Book Resource was probably the next thing. Kevin Smith, I really like Kevin Smith's films, so I went and found his podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting from and then probably the Doctor Who cast and things like that.
Yeah.
Gotta love my Who cast. Have to check for that later. See what they thought of the last episode. Mm. But yeah, that's pretty much how I got started.
Yeah, and the kind of shows that I listen to are things like Twit, Security Now, things on the Twit Network this weekend, sections like Computer Hardware this weekend. Well, then Mac Break Weekly and Windows Weekly, all that you can find that at twit.tv, link in the show notes, and then things that branch off that like Buzz Out Loud and Dig Nation Revision 3. Very familiar with people who are familiar with podcasts, I might, but well, maybe not actually. There's difference.
And I just keep thinking, as I say, my node's gonna know what the hell I was talking about for half the ones I mentioned. I'm sure they're very successful, but I'm sure a lot of podcast users, you know, it's so wet.
Yeah.
Outspread, you know. Hopefully, I've introduced somebody to someone who's maybe listening to that. And like, I will give one of those a go, and
but,
I'm sure the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Recommendations, but that's the thing about it. The idea of a podcast is to create a niche market, as the way they would put it, which sounds very over the top. But yeah, covering smaller topics well because you're interested in them and. Other people sort of gather around that because they share the interest, and then you build up a community, which is another thing that the internet and more importantly broadband has allowed to happen.
The thing I love about it is because it's relatively inexpensive to do,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that it is a niche market, a lot of these people are doing these on their favorite subjects for free, so you can tell the fact that
they
love it, mm-hmm. you know, even the things that they hate in a way. They love, because the reason they hate it is because they want to love it so badly.
Yes.
You don't hate something that, you know, you're despondent of or don't really give a crap about. You know, it's because I know this can be better. Mm. And that's what I love about the these people, you know, I remember reading, you know, not reading, but listening to reviews of things. And you know, thinking they're a bit harsh, but no, it's because they know that it can be better. Mm. And, you know, and that's why I love podcasts, and that's why I decided to make one, you know, or mm-hmm. become involved in one.
No, you're a co-founder. Don't worry about that. Right. Well, we got well into that one. What was your next most important technology changer over the last 10 years?
This can cross into the end of the 90s, maybe, but it's probably online consoles.
Oh, yes.
Online gaming consoles.
Well, when did the Xbox 360 come? Was that 2005?
Yeah, but I would say probably, if you want to go strictly by it, probably the first online gaming console was 1999 with the Dreamcast.
So it covers the entire decade, really.
Yeah, it covers it. Technically, it is a decade. Technically, the decade hasn't happened yet. We should still have another year of it.
Oh, are you one of those? I wonder.
I'm sorry, there was no year zero.
Because I've been discussing the title of this episode and saying it over and over again, and I've wondered if James has been saying to himself, it's not really the end of the decade.
Well, I don't really give a crap, but I felt that rather than have someone else bring it up, that I'd bring it up first and get it out there.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I recognize that this may or may not be the end or the start of a new decade.
Yeah.
The question is, why should we care?
Mm-hmm. So your argument is it doesn't matter.
Yeah. We started counting dates from, let's face it, which is basically an arbitrary point in time with no real meaning. other than some people maybe give it meaning, but they're not entirely sure whether that's right or not. Mm. But basically, we started one day thinking, we're going to count time from this point on.
Yeah, there's a very, very interesting history about this on a Register article I was reading a couple weeks ago, which I've linked to on my Twitter account, but I'll add it to the show notes as well. It's just an entire list of what happened to the calendar and why it technically is the future right now. We're behind the times in our calculation because of the way things were manipulated and changed. Or we're a couple of years ahead, depending on which measuring system you use. So yeah, it really doesn't matter.
Yes. People are angry for no reason.
Mm. It's a good article. I'll link to it.
Online gaming consoles. Yes. We almost forgot that. Yeah, it's something that I like computers. But occasionally the headaches of trying to set up and online. I still remember direct dialing my friend who lived across the road so we could both play Command and Conquer.
Command and Conquer, yes, that's exactly it, yeah. I used to play Command and Conquer Tiberian Sun.
Yeah, I'm actually before this, I'm talking about
Red Alert, before that, original
Command and Conquer, doing a direct dial to my friend, and then the problems we had with that, just trying to get it to work, trying to we've connected, but we're sending data packets, and one's not talking, and
the same thing as before, you had people saying, could you get off the phone, please? Yeah.
The game crunching, the halt as my granddad tried to phone my dad.
Oh, that was brilliant. People picking up the phone and going, what's going on?
And you hear it through the leaf speaker and all, hello, hello.
Yeah, and then you just get cut off. You're like, oh no, this download has taken me 15 hours and now it's going to crash. Oh man, I've just thought of a new one. Being able to pause downloads. That is a major technology change.
And an improvement so massive that it almost passed by unnoticed. But that's one of those things that's pure logic. It's the reason it's not in there is because, why the hell was it not in there from the first place, to be honest? It's one of those things that's so glaringly...
Yeah. Yeah, it would just disconnect and you'd lose everything. You'd have to reconnect and spend more money just to get the same file that you've been waiting for hours to begin with. It's come so far.
Could have worked the other way, though. Mm. I was imagining this as you were downloading an MP3 and someone picked up the phone and started speaking, that, you know, it would complete. And then you go, listen to the song, like, hello, hello, right through, the end of the song.
It's your own personal remix?
Yes.
Oh, dear. DJ Dad downstairs. Right. Next. My next one, again, towards the end of the century. The beginning of the century, the end of the decade.
It's in a century for somebody, Johnny, depending on what...
Depending on what you measure, we haven't got to the end of the... anyway. Facebook, funnily enough, is what I've written here. What I actually wrote was The Rise of Social Networking and My Transition into Facebook from Bebo. I joined Bebo first.
Yeah. I found that there was a steady... correlation between my participation and ease of use.
Mm. As it got easier, you participated more, or the opposite?
Yeah. No. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I started off in MySpace. I remember MySpace was the big thing.
I did have a MySpace.
And I remember MySpace being absolute pants. And from what I've checked, I went back and checked it, and it's still pretty much pants to actually do any form of customizing, general chat. And the basics, the bare bones there, don't get me wrong, MySpace technically did it first put it out there first. And then Bebo to a certain extent, I would have almost read that above Facebook in a certain way, the customization. I created my own assets, a custom theme on MySpace.
Yes, that's something that's restricted on Facebook, but I think that's to its credit, in a way. No?
I don't know. I just like the idea on Bebo when you go to James's page, you could tell that it was my page.
Yeah, it was personalised. Yeah. On MySpace, a friend of ours, Mark, he made a MySpace page, an example of a MySpace page that was quite pleasant to be at. That was a unique experience. I've never had that before.
Yeah, I remember Mark still uses MySpace page for a ridiculously large amount of time. Yeah.
But it was very, very pleasant. And we'll ask his permission if we can link to it. It's a bit of an odd thing to do. But... if he lies, you'll find an example of a pleasant place to be on MySpace.
Yeah, and that's rare. A lot of people found ways to modify it, but modified it to a point where it was practically unusable. I remember going to a friend of mine's MySpace page, and then glittery stars that followed the cursor and it ground my 700 megahertz computer to a halt just to find out what sort of day they were having. It wasn't worth it.
Yeah. No. The thing about MySpace, the big thing about it was the music. That was the introduction of a page that played really loud music immediately, as soon as you landed on it. Now, this happened with MIDI files before, but this is a proper song someone really, really loves and for some reason wants to shove in your face as soon as you get to their page on the internet. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Did you do that, Jibs?
No. There's not a lot of sound on the internet. I just remember going down MySpace page and then it burning, blaring at me music that I don't want to hear. Yeah. I could not. And for some reason it was just loud enough to disorient my brain that I found it
impossible to stop.
I couldn't find the mute button fast enough.
And it was always, well, I think that's changed now, but at the time you'd have to scroll down like 5 or 6 times just to find the thing that's playing. It's, in some cases people would put up 5 or 6 things that all start playing at once.
See, and this is why my space page still exists, but is very, very, it's like a wild garden.
I've destroyed all my old media. But, I don't have a Bebo anymore, I don't have a MySpace anymore, I just have a Facebook.
Bebo's where my blog started.
And the Twitter. Bebo's where your blog started?
Yeah, that's where I started writing.
There's some examples of James' writing on defendersofthemarch.com, but it doesn't go all the way back through his catalogue of posts. Is the Bebo page public?
Public, anyone can read it. You can find it at bebo.com/jay_a_story.
So that's bebo.com/jay_a_story.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's public, anyone can view it.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't be insulted. I believe one of my blogs was called Spack Attack, which was a short story about me being hit in the man bits by a mentally disabled person while walking down the street.
It's not an everyday occurrence.
No. I believe I do put forward the idea that parents should look after their mentally disabled child better, take care of their control, in a not very nice manner, because I was still suffering from ball ache.
I'm sure it's covered extensively in the post.
Yeah.
But I was on Bebo too, and I didn't really do a blog, and I never really have been successful at blogs. Anytime I have, I've usually written about what's going on in my life and being one of those boring type of people, and usually for quite a long spiel on that single post, and then it'll post for months, and then it'll do a sort of amalgamation of everything that happened since the last post. And then I've deleted them all. So I've got one on our site, Defenders of the Mirth, about my brother and his fiance and their engagement party and some other stuff as well, which is quite boring if you want to read it. I think James is more entertaining in his writing than I am.
More opinionated.
Well, opinionated can be entertaining.
You don't have to agree with me.
No.
You don't even have to read me. If you don't like it, stop reading.
Obviously, well, okay. yes, and then I was on Bebo. I didn't really use it to its full effect. And then I had joined Facebook, but I deleted it almost immediately because the only thing you could do on Facebook at that time was change your individual status on the left-hand side, which is still there, but it's just as a little badge now, like an introduction. But it used to be the only thing you could do. Yeah, you'd change it to at home, at work, at home, at work, and it was kind of...
I remember that.
Yeah, it was just sort of boring.
Yeah, I was very much the same with Facebook. I was completely disenchanted with it. I didn't see what the point was, why everyone was joining. And it's sort of something I was almost forced into.
Yes.
It was something I joined grudgingly because everyone else was there. It's like, I'm sure everyone else is doing this and doing, you know, what's the point of being on a social network except when everyone has moved on?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to be sitting socializing with myself, which... isn't very social.
No.
So I was sort of dragged into Facebook and...
But it's got a lot better. And I think it's become... Well, it lacks customization. That's true. And it can be a little frustrating because the applications that you use and badges and things that you can use aren't enough. But because it is standardized, everybody knows how to use it. And it, you don't go to your page. And, well, apart from the bloody Farmville and Mafia Wars adverts. But you can block them. And that's the thing that people don't realize. There's an option. There's a hide button about an application. And it will never come up again.
I prefer just to block the person.
No, block the application. It's not the app. It's not the person. It's the app. Anyway. No, it's very useful. You can get rid of the bejeweled notifications. You can get rid of Farmville. You can get rid of Mafia Wars, you can get rid of all that, and suddenly be able to actually read what your friends are doing.
Yeah, but I'm always looking for an excuse just to get rid of somebody, just to keep my friend like, very low.
Yeah, well, that's another topic about social networks, like having only people you know on them would probably be a nice idea. But not many people follow that nice idea.
No, it's called a friends list for a reason. It's not called a randomer that may or may not know me, or...
See, I mean, our Facebook page, Defenders of the Mirth, the way they define it is fans for the page, which yeah. is fair, because you can have as many as there are, and it's not going to be embarrassing, you're not going to be misrepresenting yourself, because people have actually decided to join. But if you're adding people as a friend, and they have to add you back, and you don't actually know each other, I mean, you've engaged in an exchange... That makes no sense. You don't know each other, but you both agree to be friends.
You know, but yeah, I had a girl add me, and the only reason I kept her on was because she sounded interesting. She knew somebody that knew somebody that knew me.
Yeah.
And it was just...
Well, that's probably what happens most of the time. I mean, there is a suggestion on the right-hand side as well. It says, someone you may know, and then ask you to add them.
And I won't identify her by going into much things, but she sounded like quite an interesting person.
Yeah.
And then after seeing numerous posts and things like that, I found out that at some level I must be insulting this person. Because she's like a,
just by being?
Just my status update. I'm so outspoken, and yeah. I basically swear quite often.
Which you're trying to curb in the show. You don't need to. It is explicit tagged.
Is it? Yeah. Really? I can drop the F-bomb.
You can do, yeah.
If fuck you yeah. All right. I say fuck quite often on my Facebook status things. And this girl, it, you know, as you sell her things, she has God to bless her. Not there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
Although no, I have my own strong opinions on the G. And she's a very nice lady, but I am incredibly harsh and hate quite a lot of trivial and small things. And at some stage, she must have been reading my post and been thinking, who the hell have I just added?
Yeah, unless you didn't even notice. I mean, a lot of people sign up to the accounts and don't really look at their page as often as we would.
I know, but I'm... There's just a couple, like, the one that basically I wrote, anyone with more than 100 Facebook friends is a sad bastard.
Yeah. Well, that's probably insulting, yeah.
I think I insulted most of my friends with that one, never mind somebody that's particularly sensitive to the swearing issue.
Yeah. Social networks, like, that is something. That's something that brought the internet to everyone.
Oh yeah,
that's. I mean, less Twitter. Twitter's more brought the internet to celebrities, but Facebook. Oh, sure. Facebook's brought it to everyone. MySpace started it. I think Facebook has finished it. Do you think Facebook will move to another service, or do you think it will always be there?
I think like most things in the internet, Facebook will continue trying to improve in its small way. And then, like most things, something completely new and different will come out of left field and basically swallow it up.
And again, the only point of being on a social network is to have people that are with you there. And if they've left Facebook, you'll have to go to the next thing.
Like, I don't know. I can't, you know, I don't even know what would swallow up Facebook. But I remember everyone saying, Bebo, this is where it was. Everyone was there. And then Facebook, something that I personally thought would fail.
Yeah, so did I, based on its original incarnation. It's just at home, at work, at home, at school, at work. I mean, the whole idea was it was set up as a way to look at people who were attractive. by its designer, Biz Stone. I'm probably wrong actually on that.
It was like Rate My Face, was it not?
What was it called?
Rate My Facebook, because it was like all the photographs of
the college girls in the yearbook catalog on the server. He was responsible for doing the yearbook, I think, and he took the photo catalog and just put it up on a service and asked people to rate it, but like hotornot.com.
Yeah, but they're kicking themselves now that we could have thought this. Could have called it Hot Book or something.
Yeah.
I actually went back to hotornot.com like 2 weeks ago just to see if it was different.
Did you ever put yourself up on it?
I did.
What did you get? You don't remember?
No. I remember being surprised when it was like 83.
Nice. Oh, the 8.3 then?
8.3, yeah, it was 8.3. And part of me was quite pleased, because it was like, James, you're a bit more attractive than you thought you were. Mm. And part of me was like, well, what do you mean it's an 8.3? The duality of James was fighting with each other, saying, it's only
8.3. It's more than that. I got 4.6. I don't know if I still have a link to the photo I used, but it wasn't just me. It was a bunch of people, and I did that typical thing of putting a big arrow in with the word me.
Those are always terrible photographs.
Yeah, they are. So that's probably why it was 4.6. Or I'm a 4.6.
I didn't have one good photograph, so I think I just created a picture with like three of my photographs pasted together.
Yes, a showcase.
A showcase. Yeah,
a portfolio. But hotornot.com, I don't think that's something that changed.
I don't know how they made money.
Oh, they make money by scams.
There we go, that's how they make money, they're scammers.
You'll get an email from them if you're a member. I'm not a member anymore, I don't think. But you get an email from them saying, somebody wants to go on a date with you. And if you click on that and log in, it's like, oh, you can only view this person if you take a 1 month trial account, which costs money. So you have to pay for the 1 month just to see who supposedly wants to go on a date with you or wants to meet. And then that person turns out to be a bot. So that's how that works.
That's lovely. That's lovely. Playing with your heart.
Yeah, so a guy a few months ago sued over that. I don't know what happened with that. But he said that OkCupid or something. Maybe, no, that's British, isn't it? Well, it was a service in America. And it did that exact scenario to him. It said that he had people that wanted to meet him. And he went to see them. And it turned out they weren't real. And he sued the company. I don't know what's happened with that since then. If I can find an article about it, I'll link in the show notes.
That's really... I'm actually interested to find out. We've all been internet burned.
Yeah, well, that's something to talk about, isn't it? okay, next most important thing, or is your list?
I think my list is pretty kaput at the minute. I can't think of anything else.
Something that just really moved you. Something that whenever it came out, you went, holy crap, this is brilliant. This is something that I can really use, and it's going to really help.
I really just want to say Mac OS 10.
Really?
Mac OS 10.
Were you an OS 9 user before?
I'd used OS 9. I'd used OS 9, had not been impressed, and I've been generally a Windows user.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started in the more media-oriented things at uni, and I got my hands on OS 10.
That explains how you could afford it then, because it was in university.
It was in uni. And I literally, basically, as soon as I had enough money, went out and bought a Mac, OS 10. Within a month of using OS 10, I had my own Mac.
Mm. We seem to be veering our way into the expensive industry changers now, which we were trying to avoid. But yes, OS 10 as an operating system and as an ecosystem and a culture. Do you subscribe to the iLife, as it were?
Oh no! Oh no! I never saw the point of iLife or the thing where the .Mac accounts.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I never saw the point in that at all.
It's not called Mobile Me.
That's a terrible name. .Mac made more sense.
You can get a .me email address.
I won't lose oversleep over not having that.
But yeah, so the operating system, not the culture.
Not the culture, no.
No, see, I like the OS, it's fine. But then you see the ads, it's like, hi, I'm PC.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Matt. Hi, I'm the average user at home telling you shut the hell up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, PC, fine, I will be the first to admit that the reason I moved away from Windows is because I found Windows quite frustrating.
Mm.
Mac OS was something a bit fresh.
Uh-huh.
But I don't like the inherent arrogance of it.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea, you know, because as soon as you start, fine, it's good, you know, wanting to be better, but basically going around telling everybody at the top of your voice that we are better, and the you know, and it's almost a snobbery involved in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there is.
You know, the reason we are better is because we are expensive, and the reason that we are, you know, the reason Windows is so popular is because the rest of you fools can't realize how good we really are. We are for the elite, the hardcore. It's like, no, it's just. The programs aren't in the start bar, they're just along the bottom. Everything's in a slightly different place.
Mm.
I just like it.
Fair enough. You like what you like.
Yeah.
I think there is an elite area. There is an elite sort of feeling. Among the average user, you're right, it is a bit snobby. But at the same time, I mean, as part of the industry, proper editing tools and video and music. I mean, you used it at university for a reason. It was a better
Final system. Cut Pro.
Mm-hmm. And that is something that it does trump the PC over, like proper media handling ability. At least in my...
Oh, no, from what I've experienced on both sides, media-wise, it seems to work better on Mac. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Wikipedia.
How could I forget Wikipedia? How could I forget Wikipedia? Wikipedia. And the funny thing about Wikipedia is, Wikipedia is a free encyclopedia for those that don't know it.
I think everybody knows. Anytime you type anything into Google or Yahoo or any search engine, there's always a Wikipedia link nowadays.
Okay, well, it's an online user created encyclopedia for the people that don't know.
Oh, sorry. I suppose it is the duty of a podcast to enlighten.
We can't just assume that everyone knows.
Of course. My mom doesn't know, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's a great source of information, generally written by enthusiasts, generally ridiculed on the media by celebrities for its inaccuracies.
Yeah.
Or one could argue its accuracies in many examples. but it's brilliant. I think Wikipedia is, because you find it in depth. Like I would go and read articles that I have no idea. Well, I couldn't sit down and critique an article. Some of the articles I read, or I couldn't say that's lies or that's true. Like, powered armor. For one reason, I was reading Iron Man or just saw the Iron Man movie. I thought, wow, I wonder how far they are along. And Wikipedia was a good stepping.
Yeah.
A good start, because they, you know, referred to all their sources and useful links, and it was a good, you know, I had no idea whether or not it was any true, but, you know, it was a good starting point for Wikipedia.
What's the power and armor, you say?
Power and armor, like an exo or endos.
Exoskeleton
that you would wear. That
you wanted to look into how far along we actually are in creating something like in Iron Man.
Yeah.
For a second, I thought you were talking about a name of a sequel. I got confused. No. Powered Armor didn't seem like a very good sequel.
It didn't seem like a good name at all.
But yeah, it just sort of, it cropped up too. Because Wikipedia wasn't in my consciousness at all. It's a bit like the iPod. It just came up as search results in Google. And I didn't know about it as a service until I started reading articles from time to time. And then I realized that it was just all user created, people coming in and setting up accounts and writing their own articles, and then other people correcting, and just it's quite an amazing feat, really. And it's only 4 years as well, 2006, I think. That's crazy.
It is. It's an amazing resource.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say anyone quoted or anything like that, but you know.
Well, I don't know. There's some studies compared to the encyclopedia. I mean, when did you ever go to the library, pick up an encyclopedia, and look up the topic you were thinking of off the top of your head?
Never.
But we do this all the time. Now, if we think of something, we want to find out about it, we look it up, have a wee read, talk about it with some people, and then just put it away.
Oh,
yeah, it's heavily conclusive. That's probably the great thing about it, is the fact that, you know, I don't think I could go and, I don't think there's any encyclopedia in the world, bar specialised ones, that I could go up and look up the comic book fictional history of the century or
and that's again, like podcasts, something that people are dedicated to and want to make sure to properly catalogue because they are compassionate about it.
Alright, you are starting to see a bit of a divergence now. A lot of the articles you would see on, especially what I read on the comic book stuff, because it's a great resource for comic book readers.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, because you'll be reading something, especially with massive crossovers making a comeback now, and you'll be like, who is that character? What about them? When you go to Wikipedia, you type it in, you can get their entire history, who they're friends with, you know, and then it's like, well, you know, it's how I got an interest in some characters, is because I read their history and I thought it was quite an interesting history. And it sort of expanded, you know.
Yeah.
It's a catch-up. If I don't pick up a couple of issues or if I find myself unable to buy comic books, I can go and quickly catch up on the history. It's not a complete comprehensive history, but it's enough of a history that when I pick up an issue, I wouldn't be completely lost.
Yeah, an amazing thing. Another more recent thing, only really in the last 2 years, is netbooks. It's affected me. I got a netbook this year. Last year, probably towards the middle of the year, and it's just been amazing. I mean, they're cheap. They're usable. They're very light. You can just carry them anywhere. They're wireless everywhere. You can go on the internet wherever you are. The battery life lasts a really long time. It's just brilliant. I had a 15-inch laptop that I sold in order to get my netbook, and I don't regret it at all. I visited the person who sold the laptop to, put it on my lap, and thought, this is a monster. There is no way I used this before.
I remember the first time I ever came into, not necessarily contact with, the idea of a netbook, and I'll admit, I ridiculed it. It was 2 years ago, and Apple had just announced / launched, because they seem to do both things.
Oh,
the MacBook Air. Who the hell is going to buy this? It doesn't have a CD drive.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem very powerful. And I didn't think, you know, I said, who would rather have this over a MacBook or a MacBook Pro?
I wouldn't really classify a MacBook Air as a netbook, though. Not in the traditional sense.
It's not as small as a netbook, but they've cut a lot of the gadgets. Have you ever had...
It's very light and thin. I have picked one up, and it would fit in an envelope, as they love to point out. But, the netbook, the idea of it was to be under £300-£200. MacBook Air isn't that.
I recognize that the MacBook Air is an expensive piece of kit, but it was the first time I was ever introduced to an idea of a
very, very light. Very,
very, very, very light. Very, you know, and basically designed for the sole use of...
The internet. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just didn't think it would work at all. I thought, why limit yourself? You know, but that's because I'm very power hungry that way. I like to think that my computer is more than just a connection to something else, that it can do things on its own. And
it's very rare that you do now. I mean, aside from watching and listening to music, there's it's like an entertainment machine connected to the internet. I don't really find myself writing too many articles.
I'm exactly the same. I'm basically... had a brief list of everything I'd done on my computer, and basically surfing, some blogging, which doesn't really require Microsoft Word or anything like that to do. Especially now, not with Google Docs or anything like that.
Exactly.
I wouldn't even buy that. you know, some film watching, and listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the most advanced game I play on my computer now is Football Manager. Which is basically just the most advanced Excel spreadsheet you've ever saw in your life. You know, everything's just numbers.
Brilliant.
What's it called when you're in the two graphics cards or the three graphics cards?
SLI or Crossfire.
Yeah, I don't require Crossfire.
No.
I don't think anyone...
I am not a gamer. I don't look at porn, and I'm not a gamer. I'm not a very typical man, I'm realizing as I go through my list. But, yeah, from last episode, I don't look at any porn. You didn't say this time that that's what you use your computer for. Are you a bit embarrassed about releasing that last time? I suppose there's no need to be.
No. I am a man.
Yes.
And occasionally, that I'm a man that's going through quite a drought.
Yeah, so I am a man, therefore I look at porn. Is that how it works?
The mass generalization of the internet is that men use it to look at porn.
Mm.
I think you're the only person that I know that probably wouldn't admit to it.
No, I don't look.
Oh,
no. Honestly don't.
No, didn't come out how I meant it to say it. The only man who admits to not looking at porn.
It is actually ironic that it is an embarrassment to say that you don't. It makes people sort of be a bit confused whenever I tell them, and also not believe me. But, yeah. But netbooks are great. The only thing that's not so good about a netbook, and it's going to change, hopefully, although I've been watching some things recently to say that, do you know that the specs of a netbook are actually specified by Microsoft? They aren't allowed to get the starter version of Windows 7 unless it is 1 gigabyte of RAM or below, and it isn't above 1.6 gigahertz. Otherwise, they have to get the more expensive version of Windows license.
Really?
Yeah. So they sort of are limiting the development of netbooks as a stronger computing platform. I think they want more money. No, uh-huh. Because Microsoft, that wouldn't make sense. Although they want to make sure that people spend more money on the hardware, but they don't have an interest in the hardware. Why do you think that would be?
I think Microsoft has an interest in the hardware.
Hmm. But they do. They say if it has 2 gigabytes of RAM in the netbook, you can't use Windows 7 Starter Edition. You have to buy a more expensive license.
Well, I think Microsoft have a sort of, not necessarily from a financial point of view, an interest in the hardware, but the specs for Vista they required was pretty high for a new operating system at the time.
Yeah, they have had a history doing that. They like to say, I think Bill Gates once said that, if you develop the operating system to work for future technologies, because technology will always catch up and they shouldn't be restricted by the current stuff. But that still doesn't really apply to this, because they're trying to make sure that the lower parts, they're trying to make sure the lower part stuff doesn't take off as the standard. So they're trying to make sure it goes stronger and faster and,
no, maybe they're actually pushing people to be more efficient with the limitations involved, which would be a good idea. Because let's face it, well, not let's face it, but I think based on the computing power that's in that,
1.6 gigahertz.
Yeah, if you refined it and enhanced it and worked on it, you could probably get a lot more out of it than you probably.
Yeah. The only things, as I said, that limit it are the screen resolution. I think it's 1024x600, and if it was just a little bit bigger, which they're coming out, 1366x768, I think is coming out, that is better because you get more real estate on the small screen. But then I mean, at a certain point you can't read it anymore, so I suppose it's a balance.
Yeah, I think the screen, look at it, yours, I don't think it could. Imagine it. I don't think about it. I can comfortably see it getting much, the text and that and the graphics getting much smaller.
Yeah. That's well, they are doing it, so I wonder how it'll do. But my netbook, my favorite thing, Spotify.
Spotify, love Spotify. Most of the music you want to hear at a fingertips touch, and the only price you pay is the small 1 or 2 minute interruptions that can't happen every 5 or 6 songs.
Mm-hmm. Although they're getting more. There's more interruptions, I think.
I noticed that. Yeah, I'm not the only one. It seems to be every 2-3 songs now.
Mm-hmm. But they're trying to push you into going premium, the $9.99 a month. And also,
never.
Never. None shall pass. But, they're trying to get into mobile phones and really music everywhere, I suppose. Like wireless everywhere.
I don't know. I barely have $9.99 a month to spend on myself. Never mind.
Again.
And on premium Spotify.
I suppose
Spotify.
The reason we love Spotify is that it is free and it isn't illegal.
Exactly. No, I think they're doing. They should be doing enough to make enough money without pushing it on you.
Mm.
Like, you know, it gets to the point where it's almost like a corporate pusher, drug-wise. You know, it's like, you know, we give you this great service for a wee while, but very little in the way of annoyances, and now we're going to annoy the crap out of you.
It doesn't annoy me that much yet, the adverts.
The adverts seem to be longer than they used to be as well.
I think it's a minute. They're up to now. They used to be 30
seconds. But do you ever get the ones where it's like sort of two adverts in a row?
No.
I found that.
Oh.
I've had two adverts in a row. Or I've been trying to listen to the same song again,
uh-huh.
and it's popped in an advert in between them.
Ooh.
That.
Okay, well, we started off saying that Spotify was something that changed our...
Oh, no, I'll admit, Spotify is brilliant. I've literally listened to things on Spotify and then think, it's just a pity that I can't carry this with me. Oh, wait, I can spend 99p on iTunes and buy this.
Which is exactly what the Napster thing was supposed to be about. You're getting the sample, the music, and then you may buy it as a result. But there wasn't anywhere to buy it until iTunes came along.
Well, technically you can buy it on Napster now.
Well, you can buy it on Napster, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know anyone that uses the Napster services that exist today.
I did for a while. It was pretty decent. Napster to go, £15 a month. You can download it onto your MP3 player, any amount of songs, like subscription music. It was pretty cool. It allowed you to listen to entire catalogs of artists for a set rate, which was nice. And I'm kind of tempted by Spotify because it's a little cheaper. It's $9.99, and if you get it on your mobile phone, you can carry 3,333 songs offline.
I think this premium service would be something to consider if I had a better iPod.
Yeah.
Like if I had an iPod Touch which supported Spotify,
mm-hmm.
it's something. Yeah, because it would. It's something that I probably would invest in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, rather than buying, you know, I'd rather $9.99 a month rather than the 10 songs that would afford me.
Exactly.
On iTunes, especially since they started putting their prices up.
Oh, yeah, well, the variable pricing came in 79p to 129.
And it's very rare that most people are sticking with a 79p.
No, it's very
bad rare. Apple. Should have stuck to your guns.
Mm. Well, it allowed them to do DRM-free. Well, there's a major change in the technology from the start to the end of the decade. It went from free music on Napster to DRM locked music on iTunes to every store that you can buy music on is completely DRM free.
Yep. See, they went from free music to non-free music to sort of free music.
Which is DRM, Spotify is, and that's the way that they can protect their model. But I think there's ways to rip it, but we're not going to go into that.
Yeah, I don't even think I didn't even want to publicize DRM. I think DRM is terrible.
Mm. That's like, one of the negative things of the last decade.
Oh, don't Apple, bad.
Did they start it? That's a good question.
I don't know if they started it, but I know that if I buy a film on iTunes, should be able to play it on whatever the hell device that I want, because I bought the film.
Yeah, that's still a problem on iTunes. I was just talking about how DRM is gone, but it hasn't gone for video, not yet.
No.
Not in any way.
No. All it took me to watch my high-definition version of Watchmen was for somebody to actually put a computer beneath a flat-screen TV, which everyone can do.
Everyone does.
Everyone's there to do that. Not.
No, not everyone connects a computer to their TV. It's not
very or good. Else
you can buy an Apple TV.
That's still, yes, you could buy an Apple TV.
But that's a bit of an expense just to watch a few videos.
What?
Again, the decade of the poor people. It's not something we appreciate.
No, bad Apple.
Like
most of us have already bought a media streaming bit of kit beneath our TV, mm-hmm. which is probably called a games console.
Of course, yes, like the Xbox 360.
Yes.
And you weren't able to stream the video, no?
No. Let me play iTunes, let me stream iTunes to my Xbox.
DRM'd iTunes?
Yeah, I can play. Really? I can play bot music on my Xbox. Mm-hmm. I can connect my iPod
mm-hmm.
and play that directly through my iPod.
Even if it's
my Xbox.
DRM'd as well, supports that.
Yeah. comes to video.
No video support. Well, again, that is the industry itself. I think they haven't come around to the idea that people are going to steal their stuff, or aren't going to steal their stuff, want to buy it, want to own it.
Oh, yeah.
And want to be able to do whatever they want with it. And it's probably a great restrictor as well of people buying stuff on the internet.
Oh, yeah. It's...
Because you can't do what you want with it.
It made me almost take a step back. I am now 99% sure, and that this is going out to Warner Brothers as well, because I've been waiting for this, when the full version of Watchmen comes out, mm-hmm. the one that they got in the States.
With the extra DVD with the story of the pirates as well.
Yeah, and plus the full uncut film.
Mm.
We've not got the full uncut film yet. Mm-hmm. When it comes out, I will be more than happy to fork out my hard-earned cash to own that.
Uh-huh.
When that comes out.
Yeah. When's it coming out here?
No idea.
No.
They haven't announced it. and it's quite annoying. It's almost as annoying as the fact that they seem to be limiting special features on DVDs now.
In our market, in Europe, or just... Yeah. Really? Just compared to...
No, not necessarily our market.
Oh.
But Star Trek
uh-huh.
on DVD.
Uh-huh.
And it came with some small amount of special features.
Uh-huh.
And it came with the director's commentary.
Yes.
Which is basically the special features things used to come on DVDs when they first came out.
Yes, that was all over the... Yeah. I remember.
None of the two-disc special editions. There's no two-disc special edition.
Yeah.
But if you look at the Blu-ray...
Yeah.
By Star Trek on Blu-ray, there's where all the special features went. See. Virtual tour around Enterprise, much more in the way of special features.
Yeah.
Director's commentary,
Blu-ray
live
yeah.
support. It's like, my God, there's where my special features went. Force me to buy your high-definition format, please.
Mm. Yeah, well, they don't respect the poor man on the street, do they?
And it's... Johnny, I can barely tell the difference.
Between the high-definition and standard definition?
Upscale DVDs through an Xbox.
Wow, that looks very good, yes.
Upscale DVDs, high-definition... Barely tell a difference. In fact, the high definition films I've watched
mm-hmm.
give me headaches.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. I think the thing that I like most about the high definition is not the video, but the sound. You can get very, very, very detailed sound out of it. It's very sharp and very good. I watched 300. I think you... What was the film you watched?
Gridiron Gang with The Rock.
Gridiron Gang with The Rock.
Yeah. The Rock's got to teach these young scallywags how to play American football.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it gave me... It's not even a special effects heavy movie.
Yeah, I know.
It could have been a band.
Transfer, yeah.
Transfer. It was one of the first discs out. But it just... I don't know if it was additional. Like, did the Blu-ray have additional frames per second, or is it still running at 24?
No, it's 24, I think, is what they like to do, because it's the movie speed, and it creates that sort of movie effect. It's funny how pacing, that's a different topic altogether, but pacing can change based on the frames per second. I watched an American rip of Breakfast Club, and then watched a UK rip of Breakfast Club, and the UK one seemed to be quicker. It's only like 20 seconds overall, 30 maybe, shorter, but it makes the film actually feel like it's going at a higher pace, which annoyed me, because I kind of preferred the American one. It was very chilled. It's odd that just that small amount can change your experience.
It's something that never really occurred to me, the difference in the frames per second between us and the States.
Yeah.
The only thing that ever bothered me on was when I was playing my Mega Drive,
uh-huh.
and the sign of a bad port or conversion from region
uh-huh.
was if the PAL version, because the PAL version had a higher resolution,
yeah.
When they ported from the States to the UK or from Japan to the UK, mm-hmm. they'd have borders along the top.
Oh yeah, letterboxing.
Letterboxing.
Yeah.
Which, if it had been a good port, they would have opened it out and they would have fixed it and it would have been full screen.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that was the big sign of a good port.
Mm.
But that's the only time it ever really affected me overly. I never really... I never really saw the difference. And in all fairness, I never saw the American versions of many things. It was always UK.
Well, that's part of the internet, really, and things that you're not supposed to do. But
yeah. Oh, I do miss Betamax.
I had a top-loading VCR VHS recorder, and for a long time I thought that I actually had a Betamax recorder until I actually saw
Betamax tape.
Yeah, and then I realized that it wasn't. It was just a top loader. But I was so convinced that we had a big old Betamax, but we never did. Did you ever have?
Yeah. Yeah, the first... My grandparents had a Betamax, and until I was about six, we used to have to go around to Strandtown, right across from the Strand Cinema. It was the only place in that area of Belfast that would do done Betamax rentals.
Mm.
And I still remember watching Masters of the Universe on Betamax.
Wow.
And it was better quality.
Better quality. Well, yeah, that was the big thing about it. It was the format wars, the original format wars, and the one with the lesser quality won out. Cheaper, I suppose.
And it was a better... It was a smaller tape. It was amazing.
Imagine
taking... You know the way the... Visualize
yes.
the VHS tape. Visualize.
Yes, I remember.
And you had the two spools. I need the black bit in the middle.
Yeah.
And as long. Cut one of the spools off.
Right.
And then just put a black side on it. And that's a Betamax tape.
Does it spool back into itself? Or are there two?
Well, I never opened it up. I was about six at the time.
That'd be a good point.
You could only see one of the spools.
Yeah.
And it was about half. It was about a third of the size.
Hmm.
It was better quality.
Well.
Right, the play didn't run as long. I don't know if they could have kept the tape. It didn't run long. But it had a full film on it, you know.
Yeah, well. So you preferred Betamax?
Yeah, it wasn't until probably 91, 92 that it had an inverse VHS machine.
Mm. Well, that's a different decade we're talking about now. We're not going to go well into the 80s and 90s as well. So
I remember them fondly, though.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. So, yeah, I think that's us. At 1 hour 16 minutes. Finished our official first episode. We're going to go into some feedback now. Things that people said about the last one. You got something to say there?
Do Ben's first. Ben's is nice.
Okay, this is from Ben. The name is Cosmic Stresshead. It's his pseudonym. And he says, "Hey, Defenders. I think you may be onto something here. You each have a good lot of knowledge and insights to bring to bear. You cover several topics nicely punctuated, and you don't lose sight of your mission to defend the Mirth. Also, the show notes are nicely laid out, making it easy to look through as you refer to them without losing concentration on the audio." Now, he's given me a challenge now. I've got to make sure to go through this one and find every link that I've referred to and try and make sure that it goes in the right order. So, thanks, Ben. But, yes, it's a good comment. And he says at the end there, "Benjamin, the caffeine withdrawn stress head." He's trying to give up his caffeine at the moment.
Foolish man. Foolish man. We love the band.
We got a feedback from Mark, the man with the tastefully done MySpace page, and he says, "You guys sounded good. Doesn't sound like a first podcast." Well, technically it wasn't. This is the first podcast officially, but thank you very much. It sounds like more professional work, which is nice to hear. The audio quality you will discover once we get proper microphones that this is not good quality. But he also added the point, "I wish I'd been there with you when you were discussing Doctor Who. I would have had a very different opinion."
Mark, we've been friends for a long time. We have. You know this. Your inherent need at this moment to disagree with everything that I like. It's wrong. Just wrong. Wrong!
Mm. James is a bit emotional there, but Mark, we would like to call you out and ask you to clarify what it is that you felt was a very different opinion.
I think he just thought it was crap.
Well, that's fair enough, but
I think he summed it up with a picture of Captain Picard going, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, yeah. That was his review. It was a picture of Captain Picard going, "What the fuck?"
I just generally think that Captain Picard, if he disliked something, would have put it a bit more eloquently rather than going, "What the fuck?" It's
he did sing the alphabet. I might put a link to that video.
In fact, that would be Sir Captain Picard or Sir Patrick Stewart.
He sang the alphabet on the bridge of the Enterprise, if you remember that video.
I do not remember that.
Well, I'll show you that after recording, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. Other feedback? I don't remember if we did get anything else, but if we did, let us know again, and I'll read it next time. But yes, thank you for people saying things. And again, you can now find us on Twitter at Mirth Defenders and on Facebook at Defenders of the Mirth Facebook page. And we'll put up notes and comments, some photographs. There's even actually a discussion board. That was another little bit of news there. You can put in feedbacks with ideas about topics we should talk about, things like that. Give yourself an introduction in the welcome friends topic and just let us know a bit about yourself.
And at any stage, if you do want to maybe even appear on the show at some stage,
yeah, we'll have guest hosts eventually. We're just going to run through this for a while until we get a sort of groove going, and then we'll bring new people in and introduce them to you. But hope we enjoyed our official first show.
I did.
Well, that's good enough, really.
That's good enough. Well, that's all. That's all. That's all I care about, as we all know. I don't care if you liked it. I liked it.
Well. Learned a bit about James there, and again, we didn't get copyright. There will be an opening theme and an end theme by the excellent Brian Smith, and we will link, as I said, to his artwork for sale.
We will. DeviantArt, isn't it?
DeviantArt.
I had the pleasure of seeing a piece myself. I thought it was awesome. I would have bought it.
I actually have one in the room here. I need to get it framed, but I purchased it myself. He does do some very good work. And we'll make sure to link to it, as I said. But this isn't the Brian Smith podcast, so goodbye.
Yeah, we're pimping our contributor.
Well, that's true. It's only fair. But goodbye from Defenders of the Mirth. We need to think of an outro soon.
We do. Bye-bye.